I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to move it.
Dun 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun,
Your mission,
dun, dun,
should you choose to accept
dun,
it,
dun, dun,
is to spend the next hour or so listening to us talk about Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, Part 1, here on I Like to Movie Movie. My name is Dan Scully.
My name is Steve Richards.
So yeah, we are here to actually talk in full spoilerific glory about Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. So thank you to everybody for putting up with the delay. Everyone who tuned in for Sunday's episode, I hope you enjoyed that. But if you haven't seen the movie yet, you are about to be spoiled, because we are going to go full spoiler territory. If you want a little taste of movie pre-spoilers, check out the bonus episode that dropped on Sunday. Otherwise, either get ready for spoilers or go see this movie, which I imagine if you're listening to this show, you already have tickets to, and then come back and give us a listen. And a little bit later on, we're going to be counting down some of our favorite stunts in movies on account of Tom fucking Cruise doing his thing.
How many people do you think were like, why won't they stop butchering this intro song?
I mean, three,
like
out of
20,
five.
At least 25% of the audience.
Yeah, I mean, it's whatever. It is what it is. We're no
less. Anyway, I'm not going to let them kill my vibe, because this is my favorite time of year. It's bigger than Christmas and my birthday combined. It is the day that Tom Cruise bestows upon us his latest artwork.
Hell
and
yeah.
I am so happy. I am so, so happy, even though I definitely need to see it again at least once.
Well, I definitely want to. I want to see it again on the biggest screen possible, because we were lucky enough to see it on a Dolby screen where the sound was rattling the chairs. And it was ideal.
I think that was a detriment, actually.
Really?
We'll get into that in a second.
Fair enough. But we'll get into that. But of course, as you guys know, at MovieMovieCast on all of the things. That's really all we need to say up front. The rest will be put into a commercial or whatever.
Yeah.
But my favorite thing about this movie that I can think of is before the film even starts, like, we get a nice little tasty intro, and then do you remember what the first credits on screen reads?
The first credits?
The first, the opening credits. It doesn't say Mission Impossible. It doesn't say Paramount Pictures. Do you remember what it says?
It doesn't say Tom Cruise presents.
It says Tom Cruise presents Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Do you think that, well, first of all, there's a lot of things we got to talk about stunt wise, but do you think that there will be, and I don't want to talk too soon about this, but do you think that there will be, after Tom's passing, a production company that is named after him in his estate that will just keep the torch going of these great and awesome blockbuster size stunts?
I gotta say, maybe not in terms of stunts, but
will it be called Paramount Network?
Yeah, right. It's called Cruise Plus.
It's called Cruise Control.
I think in terms of like big stunt moves, no, but in terms of like, you know, getting asses into seats at a theater with event movies, I bet there would be. Because like RogerEbert.com is a website that is highly regarded amongst film criticism, and a lot of great writers write for them. But Roger Ebert has not written for them since his jaw killed him, what, like 15 years ago now? So,
yeah.
But still, you'll see like pull quotes from RogerEbert.com. And I think in that capacity, we will see Tom Cruise presents, and even though he's long gone, it'll be some sort of event cinema of just like putting asses in seats.
Let me ask you another follow-up question to that in the same vein, which is, what is in the year where in the few years actually where it seems like the blockbuster is a dying art, when you have your fast franchises, your MCUs. Remember when I asked you in the theater, when does Rise of, or Transformers come out? And you said it already has, and I didn't even realize it was out. And like, but like back in the day, that Transformers would be like the tentpole event to go see, one of the tentpoles to go see that summer. And I had totally missed it because I didn't give a shit. Why do you think Tom Cruise has such a success at the summer blockbuster that than other companies have been trying and failing at?
There's two reasons for it, I think. First and foremost is that the business has changed, whereas before, one single summer blockbuster tentpole is what would keep a studio afloat. And then they would release mid-budget movies all year long, knowing that they were going to make a ton of money on their blockbusters. But now we've reached a point where every movie has to be a blockbuster in order to turn it around, in order to turn a profit. And, you know, when you spend, you know, $100 million on a movie, you've got to make $500 million. And like that keeps going up and going up and going up. And I think that what Cruise seems to understand more so than a lot of these, a lot of like the competitors for the blockbusters, is that you got to, I mean, we always say you sell the sizzle, not the steak. He sells the sizzle.
Well, actually, but then you and I say we sell the sizzle, not the fajita. But that's
not the fajita. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. You sell the butter, but you use phase. Yeah. But I think that's he sells the sizzle and the steak. Whereas, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of sizzle. We go, oh man, this next one looks good, and then you go and you go, yeah, that was fine. You know,
I'll use this as a segue into talking about the movie, but I do think that you're right in the sense that this dude showed everything in the marketing material.
Yeah.
And you and everyone's still gonna go out and see it because it's awesome.
Well, and then my other, because the two reasons is one, he sells the sizzle and the steak, you know, meaning that he gets you hyped for it and he gives you a reason to actually go to the theater. And it's worth your money to go worth my money to go to the theater to see an MCU entry. That equation is starting to shift because I know now that it'll satisfy my addiction to whatever their overarching narrative is, but it's probably not going to be a great movie. Whereas like Tom Cruise, like I will pay the money to go see that movie because I know that even if the movie's not what I want it to be, it's still going to fucking blow my balls off. You know, like that's going to be the, but I also think too, Tom Cruise and by extension, Christopher McQuarrie and just like the brand of, The Mummy though, that tried to do an MCU thing with the Universal Monsters. Yeah. The brand of Mission Impossible though is doing something that so few movies outside of like, basically its only competitor in terms of action, John Wick. They're doing something that so few movies do now, which is building your excitement in pre-production and production rather than tacking it on in post-production. Because you look at, you know, an MCU movie and you go, okay, they sort of learned the choreography and they cut around it. You look at John Wick and you go, they mastered the choreography and now they're filming it in a way that I can see it. You know, Iron Man jumps out of a plane. It looks cool, but we know that's just a bunch of like digital bits. Tom Cruise jumps out of a fucking plane and they put a camera on his face. And so like, I think that in a world that is so, so, so heavily into post-production effects, neither a good nor bad thing, but it is what it is. A movie that really focuses on pre-production is key. You know, actual blood that you have to mop up will always look better on screen than digital blood that you put in after the fact.
Oh yeah.
There's a case for both. But there is a hunger right now for that mop and bucket crew to be able to clean it up, you know? And I think that that Mission Impossible understands that and kind of gives us the best of both worlds. And luckily for them and for us, they have a legitimate, actual, certifiable psychopath at its center who is willing to do it. And I think that is what Mission Impossible really is ultimately about.
All right, well, walk us through the movie because I had a problem with it.
Well, I mean, should we start off with our problems? Because I have a couple problems with it as
well. My problem was more self-inflicted, if you remember correctly.
Yes, yes, involving gummy bears and other such things.
Yes.
But that said, you were having a bit of a meltdown as a result of THC intake, but only as it's been enhanced by breathless intensity.
Dude, when I say that I was having an actual panic attack, tech in the movie during one of the scenes, I had to get up and go to the bathroom because I just couldn't handle how tense everyone was being and how like the Dolby seats definitely intensified everything, because after every like great line drop or every, you know, the lingering sound effect, all of a sudden you just hear like from under you, and you just feel the vibrations, and I'm just like shaking because of the vibrations from the sound and because of the panic that has settled in.
Because of your heart beating at a
the train rate. Scene, dude, during the train scene, I wanted to crawl out of my skin. It was so well done. It was so crazy.
I was considerably more grounded than you in terms of chemical intake, and I still felt very, I mean, I think that's one of the things that especially from Ghost Protocol on, that I think that this movie does well. And I wrote a piece on it years ago that it wasn't my favorite piece because I couldn't quite get the concept out. But what I like about Mission Impossible is they always have dominoes falling. But as those dominoes are falling, they're adding more dominoes to the end of the line, so that there's no moment of exhalation until it is absolutely keyed to that point. And that train sequence at the end, you know, a credit to this movie is that I was holding my breath. But even at the end, even though it is technically and literally a cliffhanger, they still manage to get an exhale at the end that Spider-Verse and Fast X actually didn't get in creating a cliffhanger. No. And I think this has to do
Fast
with how...
X wasn't even a cliffhanger, dude.
Yeah, you know what? They stopped the movie.
If Fast X is a cliffhanger, push me off that cliff. I'm done. I'm done with it.
But make sure you're in a car.
Yeah.
You
want to die. I'm ready to die.
You forgot to take away my car. Oh! How
could I forget? I'm ready to be killed in that universe. I'm done.
Well, but I think as a management of tension, where you are constantly setting up dominoes and letting them fall, what they did at the end of this movie is they didn't let all of the dominoes fall, but they stopped stacking them. So it does feel like an end, but we know that the next one's going to pick up with that same dominoes falling. I hope that makes sense.
I know. And unfortunately, it's going to go on without my boo, Fergalicious herself, Rebecca Ferguson.
Dude, she is such a good actress. She's so pretty to look at. She's so great in these movies as playing like a foil to Ethan Hunt. And R.I.P. to whatever her character's name was. Ilsa
Faust. Because I just watched Fallout yesterday. Here's how powerful the Tom Cruise effect is. Like 2 weeks ago, me and my roommate Joe, my friend Megan, we were hanging out. And we started Mission Impossible Fallout. And we started it too late. We started at like 9 o'clock, which is too late for us as adults. And by the time like 10:30 rolled around, everyone was like, we gotta pack it up, pack it in. It's time to go to bed. And then we finished it yesterday because all week, Megan was like, we gotta finish it. I wanna know what happens. And she's only seen one other movie. So now we're going to go all the way back and start it over.
I was going to watch all of them leading up to the new one. Yeah. And I said, nah, you know, let me save that for when Dead Reckoning Part 2 comes out. And it's so obvious that you're just watching TV right now.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you just looked back from the TV to tell me that you're not watching TV. It is so frustrating, I must say.
I'm sorry.
I know that Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives is on.
No, it's not. That's not why I did that.
I opted not to watch all of them leading up to this one. But now that I watched this one, even though in my head, like the outist in me is like, no, I want to watch them in order. I just kind of still want to watch them all, even though, you know, because it's just such a good formula done well. But it's a series that has morphed over time. You know, the first one was the De Palma movie. The second one was John fucking Woo. And it was
which
John
you can hear us. You can hear us do a drunk commentary on couple episodes ago,
many episodes ago now.
Yeah, that's still a couple.
Still a couple. And then J.J. Abrams, Brad Bird, and then Macquarie finally took over, and it's sort of his series now. But like everybody left a little bit of their style on it. But what I like that Macquarie brought back this time around in Dead Reckoning was something that De Palma brought to the first. Because these movies are, you know, the second one is an action movie. The third one's sort of a Bond movie. The fourth one, Ghost Protocol. That's where we start to finally get back into, like, the cool espionage stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and part one, because this is before we had action set pieces. You know, there was the Tom Cruise on the train, but he didn't actually ride on top of a train like he did in this
one. That was cool, though. Yeah,
it was super cool. But that is part of the reason why stunts have become part of the series, because it's like, oh, you got to have one cool, high-concept set piece. But the original one, we forget, is a De Palma movie. And so there's lots of Dutch angles. There's lots of, like, classic cinema in terms of giant heads talking to the screen. Or yeah. Talking off the screen, conversations that are framed in exciting ways, even though there's actually no motion happening on the screen. And for the first time since the first one, I think that was brought back in a really big way in Dead Reckoning Part 1. There was touches of it in Fallout. There was a lot of references to just like 60s spy kind of stuff, especially yeah. when they were in France in Fallout. But here, like, almost I think as a result of the big action set piece sort of being spoiled, to the point where it was like almost underwhelming to watch Tom Cruise ride off the cliff. We've all seen it 100 times on a million yeah. Twitter feeds, you know, threads. And so that was like, that was not as exciting as it could have been had it been like a surprise. I found what was most exciting about the movie was more the dialogue stuff, more the espionage stuff, and the way that McQuarrie framed it to kind of feel dynamic in the way that a 1960s spy television show would.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if I think Fallout is like kind of the high watermark for the series, but if that movie took everything to this is action, I'm glad that Dead Reckoning brought it back to like, these are spies that are saving the world.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, you don't have any like fist fights, like the bathroom brawl in Fallout, but you have so much of people in masks chewing scenery with Kittredge, and like that yeah. shit is just as on brand to Mission Impossible as anything else. And like, I felt a lot of that in Dead Reckoning, which is the biggest compliment I can get paid.
I also like that they did this like new thing where the enemy is no longer a person.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, because it's always been, all right, Ethan Hunt is probably the best poker player in the world, because yeah. he can read any human being. But what happens when his enemy is not a human being?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good, that was definitely probably like the first question on the whiteboard in the writer's room. And I think they nailed it, because you could easily go down the path of like, okay, well, this is, you know, this is where we're going with it. And then it turned into like a really hokey thing, like any of the other humans versus machines movies yeah. that we've thought in the past.
Well, what I like about this is the machine has thought of everything.
Yeah.
Ethan Hunt improvises better than anyone. We'll yeah. figure it out. We'll figure it out. And so they're kind of like the ultimate foils to one another, where it's just this, every possible contingency has been planned for, except for one, Ethan Hunt, who has no plan. You know, yeah. like, and I love that they're perfect for one another. Who's gonna win? I don't know. I mean, I do know, we all know.
Yeah.
But
maybe not.
We don't know.
Because I do feel like they are, even though Tom has come out in the press and said he'll do it till he's 80.
Yeah.
I think he, like, his physicalness definitely has a timestamp.
Yeah.
And that's coming up soon. So I think they're starting to figure out how to pass the torch. Well, so I'm wondering if like maybe.
We yeah. also said this 12 years ago with Ghost Protocol. Jeremy Renner was supposed to be that guy.
Yeah, but then Tom found the lost house when he was doing yeah. the mummy. He found the house of Dracula and drank the blood.
But I always just say there was a pitch meeting and they were like, we're going to phase this Renner guy in. And he was like, Bill, tie me to the plane. And then Bill, the Paramount guy, is just like, what do you mean? He's like, tie me to the plane. And then two movies later, Renner's gone. And Tom yeah. Cruise has more abs than he's ever had.
I didn't listen to our episode. What was our predictions?
But, well, before we get into that, I want to say one other thing about the yeah. bad guy essentially being an AI. is that ends up being this parallel thing to Tom Cruise's fight to save the movies from soulless AI crap. You know what I mean? Because you know why the Marvel movies entertain?
You're right.
Because they figured it out. They found the formula. Yeah. They found the right budget, the right mishmash of pieces, and they can throw that into the machine every single time, and it's going to come out with something that at the very least gets the job done.
That's how She-Hulk ended, with that joke.
That, exactly. And like, yeah. And that is literally what we're seeing Ethan Hunt do as an analog for Tom Cruise, where it's just like, the studio has thought of everything.
Yeah.
But you know what they haven't thought about? Tom Cruise. The one guy who can improv around anything. He can have children that won't speak to him. He can have ex-wives that hate him. He can be the demigod of a slave-holding psycho church. And he's still working. He can have a meltdown about Katie Holmes, or he's climbing on Oprah. He can do interviews where he talks about how psych meds are bullshit and how psychology is a bullshit science. And he can pivot out of all of that by getting his ass tied to a plane or doing it, whatever it is that Tom Cruise does. We love him. Within weeks, there was a world of people pissed that anyone would ever go see a movie that stars Ezra Miller because they're such a criminal. And these people are also very verbally and very overtly excited to see the movie that stars the extremely problematic and probably in a large scale, infinitely more criminal demigod of a cult to see his movie. Why? Because that motherfucker's going to parachute off a motorcycle. And so like the AI should, Tom Cruise should be the easiest thing for the AI to kill. You can dig 2 inches deep into his profile and find something problematic and cancelable.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to do it because we all love Tom Cruise because he's the only one who can do it. It's fucking psychotic. Watching Dead Reckoning and watching him just be like, I gotta outsmart this computer. All I could think was like, this is just Tom Cruise's life with a little bit less action.
Yeah.
It's wild. That said, if I were to pay a thing that I didn't like about this movie, I think when it comes down to like the gadgets and the conveniences that help them get out of sticky situations, they were not as inspired this time. And
I don't remember any of the gadgets.
Do you remember when they're in, I guess it was France. Oh, no, was it Italy? Where they had a better action sequence than
Fast X? Yeah, it was Italy because I remember thinking, man, Italy's had a rough year.
Yeah, first it became a
because this is right after also
court in a Fast X.
This is also right after the 95 collapse here in Philadelphia. So while I'm watching this scene go down, this chase scene go down at the roundabout in Italy, the famous one, whatever it's called, I was thinking, man, the people who live in this town are probably like, can you guys please leave us the fuck alone?
We're just trying to make it here, a pizza.
The infrastructure here is so fucking terrible.
The streets are rivers.
It probably was similarly sounding to the people in South Philadelphia. Like, hey, where's my bridge?
This is more north in Philly, but still.
Oh, yeah. Either way.
Because they were like, yeah, dude, where's my fucking bridge at, dude? Don't even fucking start with this collapse shit, bro. Yo, I guess it was Italy, where Tom Cruise just pulls out a gadget and presses a button and is like, yeah, they have cars stashed around here for us.
But that makes sense. That's back to your point about the spies and the network.
So then why was the car that was planted by the IMF to get agents out of sticky situations a little Mr. Bean car?
Because it's funny.
It's funny for me. It was a great scene. It made one of the most killer action sequences I have ever seen in a movie.
Yeah.
It was funny. They're handcuffed across one another, so it's hard to steer. The whole thing was like perfectly orchestrated. But why would the IMF just give him like a fucking car? Like, why not just have a car? Really?
I'm also really glad that Hayley Atwell's character wasn't just another, like, you know, essentially, is it Isla or Isla? Isla Faust?
Yeah.
I'm glad she just wasn't a complete replacement. Ilsa Faust, yeah.
Yeah, because they kind of cycled through ladies and replaced them throughout the series.
Yeah, but Hayley Atwell, I was like, all right, so she's gonna come in and replace her, and she's gonna be the same fucking cookie cutter Bond girl. But she's cool as hell and badass.
And badass. Well, what I like about her character in this is that she's like, so Ilsa Faust is someone who's like an adjacent Ethan Hunt. She's got her
Ilsa Faust is
own.
also badass, by the way.
She's
Let's not
badass.
forget.
She's incredibly badass.
Yeah.
She kills people by climbing on them and shit. She's like an adjacent Ethan Hunt, like a freelance agent who sort of got brought into the thing. But Hayley Atwell's character,
He's a thief.
she is an Ethan Hunt, where she's a criminal who is being given a chance to join the IMF, which we sort of learn is Ethan Hunt's history in this. So whereas like Ilsa's just like, you don't know my origin story, but I'm just as good as you. And plus with the added feminine wiles. So like she's a great foil for Ethan Hunt. And so just to bring in Hayley Atwell is like, you know, she's what Ethan Hunt used to be
Yeah.
before, you know. So like she, and also I think you're right, if they are going to move this series beyond Tom Cruise, it is smart to take his character and move it up to a sort of teaching role.
Hayley Atwell's 41, so a good 20 years on cruise.
There you go. Well, I mean, he was what, 49, I think, in Ghost Protocol. I was just writing my review, so I had that in
Probably.
there. I think it was 49, because that would be, and he's like 53 now.
Yeah, no, he's 61.
He's 61.
Yeah.
Doesn't look a day over 38.
Because
Well, actually, to tell you the
the
truth,
vampire blood.
he kind of does a little bit. He looks a little bit his age. He's getting there.
He's 61. Thomas, good old Thomas Mapother.
Thomas Mapother and his cousin, William Mapother, who just goes by William Mapother, who's on Lost.
Billy Maps.
Yeah, Billy Maps. Looks just like Tom Cruise, and if Tom Cruise dies doing a stunt, they'll Paul Walker his face over William Mapother to get
And
the job
then
done.
Charlie Puth will write an even better song
Yeah.
that he sings on a piano skydiving from space.
Now here's the thing, though. If we close out the Mission Impossible series, you know who we have to get to do the theme song. The answer is clear. It would make everybody go nuts if, right at the end of Dead Reckoning Part 2,
Jeremy Renner
it's
started
done.
singing his album.
That's probably a better answer than I'm gonna give, but although that was one of our predictions, I believe. But no, it ends, and then an updated version of the Limp Bizkit Mission Impossible song from Part 2. Dude,
Oh, but it's got to be a slow
talk
one.
about stunts.
It's got
Well,
to be a slow version.
it would probably like, you know, like slowly come in the way that Linkin Park does when he just kind of
Yeah.
sings. And you'd be like, is that Fred Durst? And then you'd start to hear the riff and it would be slow. You'd be like, this kind of sounds like their song from the
Yeah.
second one, but it's a little slower.
From the
I
Mission
like it.
Impossible
And then
2.
right when it hits, he does the, no, why you want to hate me? Bam, bam, bam. Everyone goes, fuck, dude, that theater would burn to the
Then
ground because
Tom
I would
Cruise
burn a
halo
ticket to that movie.
jumps.
Awesome. He halo jumps in, lands in a 3-point stance,
Yeah.
pops up, gets in his plane, flies away, but like, you know, like
3-point
sprinkles
stance,
glitter.
just call it what it is. It's a superhero landing.
Superhero landing. Is that what we're calling it now? I'm into that.
Yeah.
Although, knowing Tom, he wouldn't actually land at in a superhero landing. He would hit the ground running, and then he would run,
Yeah.
and it would be glorious. And so
Oh my
that's another
God.
thing in this movie. There is some running.
There's a lot of running.
Lot of running in here.
You and I stood up and applauded when he started running.
We saluted.
The entire theater stood up and started crying.
Yeah, it was a beautiful moment. And then the Dolby rumbled us back into our seats.
Yeah.
Although with his running, I think that one
I
of the
started crying from psychosis.
I think the most pa yeah, pound for pound, most exciting segment of this movie, if I can isolate one scene, is Tom Cruise trapped in that very skinny alleyway,
Oh yeah.
fighting two people and not able to get out on either side. And
That wasn't good for my claustrophobia.
that was intense because he
Yeah.
can barely move and he's little. And he's
The
fighting what's his name? Pom Clemente.
who's also fucking
She's
amazing.
terrifying in this movie. Really scary, like has a bloodlust in her.
Love the fits, love all the
But
fits.
they don't want Tom Cruise just like beating the shit out of a lady. So this fight is choreographed in a way where he's defensive and forceful with her without ever, like, just, you know, putting a pound on her.
Yeah.
But also two giant security guards. So he's, like, going back and forth trying to expand a tiny location and is constantly being pressed upon by people that he has to fight with different styles, each style altered to fit in this tiny little area. It's like really a lot of layers of tension. It is brilliantly done. Although I do believe at one point he does give Palm Clementine like a to the moon kind of hit.
Yeah, because like, I remember you and I were both like, calm down there, Tommy.
Yeah, like it was a cool fight. And then finally You're like, oh man, she's going to kill him. And then he's just like, boom, broke your jaw. And that's,
you know, he did wait till the very last second.
He waited until his back was literally against the wall.
Yeah.
And again, cliffhanger, back against the wall. They use them all.
Yeah. Well, I said yesterday while we were finishing Fallout, I'm like, because they kept doing trope after trope after trope after wash away line after wash away line. And I'm like, you know, I'm not even mad because they do it so fucking well.
They do it so well. And it's so
it's gorgeous to watch. All the cinematography is amazing. The people are great to look at. It's just a great movie.
It's big, old school spectacle.
Yeah.
You know, like this is, you know, we've had good movements towards like, hey, let's have celebrities that look like real people. You know, we've like done cool things like that. But it's like sometimes we do forget that you go to the movie to see something that you don't see in real life. And you know, you don't see in real life 100% beautiful people falling out of planes and fighting. Like, it's complete fantasy, blockbuster earnestness writ as large as possible. I just can't get enough of it. I'll be sad when we hit the last Mission Impossible movie.
I can't believe we're going to see it in our lifetimes.
We could die before next year. Anything
hopefully
can happen.
We won't.
Hopefully we won't. Fingers crossed.
I hope that the credits roll on Dead Reckoning Part 2 and we go outside and that's when the asteroid hits.
Yeah.
And then like we just die happy.
Just be like, yeah, man. And Tom Cruise is riding it.
Tom Cruise rides by on a horse and stops and says, I listen to every episode. Thank you, boys.
Yeah. And then he punches the asteroid.
You're the reason I do what I do. And then his horse flies into space.
He has that one line that almost seemed like another like dual real life and movie line when he's bringing Haley Atwell, what's her name, Grace in this, I believe it was.
It's Haley Atwell. It's Haley Atwell until she does two movies, and then I'll remember her name.
Agent Carter.
Other cast member in Mission Impossible.
That's true, yeah, because we all know Benji and Luther and Elsa, but...
Because who knows if you're going to be around the next movie, you know?
Yeah, like,
I don't remember Renner's name. Newton. Agent Brandt, was it?
No clue. I know Brandt. Kittredge.
Yeah, I know Kittredge.
But when he's bringing her onto the team, and... You know, Luther's like, you know, we promise that you won't get hurt. And he's like, I can't promise that. I can't promise you that at all. But what I can promise you is that no matter what happens, your life will always matter more to me than mine. And that's the promise he makes her. And he's almost looking right at the camera, saying to the audience.
At me.
You can have all of your doubts in the world.
Yeah.
But there's one thing you can count on me, Tom Cruise, about, is that your entertainment will always be more important to my life. Like, he keeps doing it. He's like, just tie my ass to a fucking plane. Let's go. Yeah. And that's okay that you're a demigod of a cult, I guess. Because no one else is willing to make that trade. I love Brad Pitt, but if Brad Pitt was faced with die, like, you could die, but it'll be the most entertaining thing in the world. He'd be like, well, I'm not going to die. Tom Cruise would be like, can you make it even harder for me to live? Because I will do that for these people. And they're like, absolutely.
I think that we as a society need to take the E from Chuck E. Cheese and assign it to Tom Cruise, because Tom Cruise is entertainment. He is Tom Entertainment Cruise.
Tom E. Cruise.
Yeah.
And it Tommy sounds Cruise. Like Tommy Cruise. Tommy Cruise.
Yeah.
Man,
but unfortunately it is just now Chuck Cheese.
That's But he's his name is Thomas Mapother, so Tom Cruise is a nice little abbreviation of that. But yeah, he will literally die just to entertain us, and that's the trade, and it's pretty damn good. But that's what Ethan Hunt represents. He's going to get the job done.
Do you think that's how he dies, though?
Tom Cruise is gonna like ride a motorcycle back from space. He's gonna come home and then he's just gonna like slip on a grease spot in his kitchen and bang his head. and it'll just be the most inane death, and he'll have just, you know, motorcycled on the moon.
What if he writes it so that him and Ethan Hunt die at the same exact time?
I would be as pleased as I am sad, but one thing I wouldn't be is surprised, because yeah. It would just be like, yeah, of course.
He's but like the way that happens,
John Doe in Seven, he planned it all out.
The way that happens is that in real life, he is going to Mars.
Yeah.
And in the movie, Ethan Hunt gets shot into space at the last moment. But like they film, the last thing Tom does on Earth is film the final scene for Mission Impossible 10.
He is apparently shooting something in space.
That's what I'm saying. The last thing he will shoot is the ending of Ethan Hunt's character arc, and then he will live out the rest of his days on Mars.
He gets like blown out of the space station, so it's just Tom Cruise / Ethan Hunt floating into the distance. But he's got a camera on his chest, so he's like falling, and he's talking to the camera, and he's just like, you know, I may be going out into the wild blue yonder forever, but I'll still see you at the movies. And then, you know, he smiles those pearly whites, pops his helmet off, and just like, and then shatters in a glorious, you know.
Because he's going to Mars, like there's been almost zero stunts done on Mars. So like every stunt he does is a new stunt.
Yeah.
The biggest stunt on Mars. It's like he just jumps over like a 3-foot rock, right? It's like that is the biggest jump that's ever been done on Mars.
Next summer I'm doing it off of 4 feet.
See you at the movies.
We'll see you at the movies. Yeah, I guess that's true. Like once you get to Mars, literally, like to a point, everything you do is the coolest thing that's ever been done on Mars. Completely resets.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna give my forearm a sponge bath, and everyone's like, "Holy shit, he's doing that on Mars!"
That's the first time that's been done on Mars.
That's crazy, and he's filming it. It's the first time anyone's ever filmed it on Mars, too.
That's insane. He's wild.
That'd be great if he got up to Mars. He does.
But like that's his retirement plan, is to make his life infinitely easier so that everything he does
is the
retirement level. Is technically a stunt.
I want to see he gets to Mars and he's just like, all right, I'm the first guy on Mars. I'm Tom Cruise. And then from behind a rock, like another older, wiser Tom Cruise steps out and he's like, what are you doing here? He's like, you've always been here.
No, it's Keanu Reeves.
Of course.
he's like we just wrapped John Wick 11 on Mars.
On Mars. Just when you thought he was dead for the 11th time? Nope. Yeah. They killed his Mars dog. Nope. He had to come back.
James Mars dog?
Yeah, they killed Mars dog, the Mars dog. Yeah. I mean, Keanu Reeves' band is named Dogstar. So there's a connection to be made here that he would do this.
And then Ethan Hunt and John Wick fight Dr. Manhattan together.
We have less than a minute before we run out of time and do a commercial. Gut feeling, who wins in a fight? Ethan Hunt, John Wick. All of their resources at hand.
Ethan Hunt. Every time, Ethan Hunt. Not even a contest.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now that John Wick is dead and he's killable, I think you're right.
Also the power of friendship.
Yeah, this thing, he's got the team.
Yeah.
And his little golden car for France. Yep. Okay, we're taking a break.
All right.
And we'll be back to talk a little more and do our lists. Hey, everybody. It's me, Dan. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if the ads on the podcast are actually working, because I don't think we have enough listeners to be able to activate ads. Now, this is partially my fault because of the time that I took off from doing Movie, but that doesn't mean I can't record an ad for the podcast itself, which is what you are listening to right now. So make sure you follow I Like to Movie at MovieMovieCast on all of the things. Please subscribe. Please tell your friends. It would be very helpful if you could subscribe specifically on Spotify. That really beefs up the numbers. If you heard a little bell jingling, that's my cat's collar because she came running over because she can't let me record a fucking commercial in peace. Hi, Doris. Hi, Stinky. But please do all of that and check out our other show, Hot Property, at Hot Property Pod on all of the things. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll get you back to the show. We are part of the Hot Property Podcast Network. Peace. All right, Steve seems to have stepped away. I just want to throw this out there before since we just took a break, I just want to throw this out there, all of our listeners. Fuck Zoom. Zoom baited us with the free, over the pandemic, unlimited meetings. Then they cut it down to 40 minutes. And now we just recorded for 40 minutes. And then it told me I had to wait a certain amount of time before I could start a new Zoom meeting. So a little peek behind the curtain for listeners to how low quality we are working with right now. But Zoom, man, total bait and switch. But see, my big gripe about Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, or as you coined, Madurpo, I thought that the tech, the plot armor by way of tech, was a little bit goofier than usual. I didn't mind it, but that's like my one big bugaboo with the movie. Do you have any issues with the movie in a craft, stylistic, or plot sense, or anything at all?
No, not that I recall. But like I said, I was dealing with my own.
Fair enough.
But I don't remember having any issues with it. I just kept, like, I guess my one gripe would be that it was, but I still enjoyed this part, so I'm not going to say it's a gripe, but it was formulaic. But like, yeah. I knew it was going to happen. I was like, all right, here comes this set piece. All right, tempo, dialogue. Oh no, someone's here. Run.
Yeah.
Time to run. Oh no, it's time to fight. All right. Take a deep breath, but not too deep, because here we go again. Like that.
Get this person in a mask. Let them do this person, this person. Yeah, I get what you're saying. It was formulaic,
but I enjoy that. That's why I go.
Yeah.
To see. That's why I said the best movie I've watched in the first half of the year was the trailer for this movie that I've only just seen.
I think that we often think of formulaic as an insult, because it's used as like, it was kind of formulaic. But the thing about formula is that they exist because they work. Yeah. And I think when a movie is using formula as a crutch, it never works.
Like, but when they're using Furious looking at you,
and when they're using formula as a basis upon which to build cool shit, then I'm into it. And I think that's what Mission Impossible's use mostly is. You know, they're using it as an excuse to hit us with these action set pieces and things like that. Like I was bothered by, you know, the bomb at the beginning that Benji had to figure out, and he had to like decode it, and there was riddles. A bomb that you decode with riddles, that's literally Riddler shit. You know, like it felt not of a piece with that. Then again, it does sound like something an AI would.
But they weren't riddles.
Yeah, they had a couple riddles.
They weren't riddles.
There were trivia questions, but it would.
No, there was no bomb.
There was no. Yeah, but I mean, like, for the sake of the set piece, he had a physical bomb that he was.
No, but they weren't riddles either. That was the AI asking questions to learn about Benji.
Yes, that's what we ultimately learn. But in the moment, as a device of tension, there's a whole scene devoted to he's got to answer these trivia questions to defuse this bomb. We learn later that it's bullshit, but like in the moment it's played like that. And it's like, it just seemed like a silly thing. I was like, we couldn't create this tension with something that wasn't him answering. That said, I'm sort of talking out of it, because it does retroactively earn it by being a knowledge gatherer.
I was going to say, it goes against your whole domino thing, you know, where they're constantly setting him up and knocking him down.
I just wonder if there's a way to write around that, because like, even as I actually probably would have been pleased, even if as simple as him just being like, this thing is asking me questions to defuse it. And then Luther being like, are you serious? He'd be like, it sounds crazy to me too, but we got to do it. That would be enough to get me to do it. But then just to have them like wholesale take it seriously, or even like, I love that it ends with Luther being like, I got to step away for a minute to work on something. Which functionally means we're splitting the team up and they're all going to come together for a big flourish at the end. But for him to just be like, in order to do this gigantic hack, I've got to get away from you guys and get a warehouse where it's just me and me hacking all of, no one can look at me or talk, stay away from me while I do this ultimate hack. I was like, I don't know.
And where did we leave him?
Literally, that was it.
In the warehouse?
Like, well, not even in a warehouse. He's like on the computer and he's talking to Ethan. He's like, Ethan, if you want me to do this, it's going to take time and I'm going to need space. It's like the ultimate hack.
So basically, I'll see you in the next movie.
I'll see you. He's like, I'm signing off for now because I've got to hack a lot of things. And I can't hack a lot of things under pressure, even though that's literally all I ever do in these movies. So I'm going to go to, well, I won't tell you where I'm going to go, but I'm going to go then hack. And like, I don't, like shit like that, I thought was a little weak in this movie. Yeah. There was like little things where they would find, you know, like just a real, but at the same time, like, yeah, go hack and come back with your ultimate hack and blow my mind. Cause they will. It just some of that stuff felt weird. I was a little weirded out by everybody knew how to do sleight of hand.
Wait, what if Luther's like, now I can't tell you where I'm going because it's got to be a big hack. But if you ever get the hankering for some Nashville hot chicken, I think I might know where to help you.
It's like, I know a guy near where I hack. It's
just
good.
Give me a call. Area code and then whatever area code Nashville is. But that's all I'm going to tell you.
And my zip code. It's like, Ethan, the only way I can do this hack is if I give you my social security number right now.
Ethan, the only way to do this hack is if I go to the Ramada Inn at 2492
Ethan, Boulevard. What I have here is my bank records. I'm going to hold them up page by page in front of the camera. Real slow like. But no, I think
the way that you did that, I'm just like, it's like the Star Wars credit scroll. Yeah. It's really funny.
As it's just going up. The top of his bank statements are like, somehow it's the Emperor has lived.
Search history, his whole search history and website.
He's like, Ethan, you don't want to look at that line.
Yeah.
We'll pretend we didn't see
it's porn.
Yeah. That was what was being suggested. The like things like that I thought were kind of silly. Oh, I started to say something and then I lost it. Ah, now you're yawning.
Sorry.
It's all good. I think
the conversation is
fair enough. You motherfucker. No, I think that like little things like that were what bothered me, where it just seemed like you could probably write your way around these like clunky lines. I was also ever so slightly miffed that Tom Cruise did not give Haley Atwell the parachute to ride away on. Now, granted, I like that he did that because he's trusting her as an agent. Like, if you are the next me, you will get this job done, and this is the plan. So I was like, in the moment, I guess it felt weird.
I did like, and like, he even says something to her, like, figure it out, like with the bomb thing.
Yeah.
When he's like, you go get the bomb. He's like, what do you mean, go get the bomb? He's like, you'll figure it out.
You'll figure it out. And the train is going because he hanged the conductor in the brake cable. Oh, beautiful stuff.
The train scene was so fucking cool, man.
I love a spy sequence on a train. Yeah. It's the best. On the train, in the train, through the train. Oh, man. Trains are great.
Who's that dude?
A small Spanish location dude? In motion. Issa Morales.
Man, he's a good villain.
And he's, what I like
he's,
about not him,
really, he's a puppet for a computer.
He has pledged allegiance to his favorite conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And he's terrifying and dangerous because...
Did he die?
No, he didn't die, but he didn't get the thing that he wanted.
Yeah.
And remember, he fell off the train.
Benji
has the coal thing.
He's going to a waterfall of some kind.
Yeah. Well, and he has... But again, he is a slave to this. He's like, if I hitch my wagons to the unstoppable AI... I am now unstoppable, but now he has run into Ethan Hunt, who is also unstoppable in his own way. And so I like how at the end, that guy has a little bit of doubt towards his allegiance. Like now he's pissed at Ethan
bleeding.
Hunt. Yeah, he's pissed at Ethan Hunt, but he's also like, man, I thought I was untouchable and I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, and
he basically wants to be like the human avatar for the AI.
Yeah. And as long as he's connected to that. But I mean, like, there is something tempting about going, you know what? I want to stop being critical of movies. I just want to turn my brain off and watch Ant-Man 10. And there's a piece that comes with that. And I think he sort of represents that. I'm not saying that seeing Ant-Man 10 is evil, but it's just like...
I don't want to see it again.
Yeah. Turning off your faculties to just be like, to take the opiate. He's almost taking the opiate of like, if AI is going to ruin the world, I will at the very least bend the knee to the AI so that I can. And that's a scary mentality that he represents, but it's an understandable one. You know,
it's better to rule in hell than to serve in heaven kind of thing.
Yeah. Like if it was life or death, there are very few worldviews you couldn't get me to at least pretend to adopt on account of just, I don't want to die. You know, I don't want to suffer. I don't want to die. End of the road. But I don't know. Any closing thoughts for Madurpo before we go into our list?
When do we get the second one?
I think it's just 2024. So it's,
man,
just a year
away. I hope so, man.
Man, I had such a good
point. Did they film at the same time?
It's driving me nuts. I believe they did film, or at least there's like footage from part two was filmed for part one. But alas. Now, I think that Luther is
2024. It does say 2024.
Luther is such a good character.
June 28th. And so Benji, 1 year from now, character. We would have already have seen the movie.
Well, I can't wait. And we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Probably in the exact same season as we saw this one.
We better start our rewatch now.
Yeah, I'll get to it. I got a lot to watch. Now, I wanted to say, I think also one other small ding against this movie is that a lot of Luther and Benji's background action kind of just felt like we were keeping them around for the fuck of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, because they got to be there, but they didn't feel as integral to the team, except in terms of like, I've super hacked the airport and I can look at every face. And it's like, okay, well, now we have that device. And it's just click clacking on the keyboard and doing that. And it's a shame because I think that Mission Impossible, especially like something like Fallout, really works the best when it's like not a plan coming together, but a bunch of improvised plans coming together on account of their chemistry. I feel like that was a little looser this time around. They still do it, but it was a little looser this time around. And but then again, that could also be we're scattering the pieces to the wind and we're seeing the preliminary parts of this, and the second half of the movie second part of the movie will tighten that up and bring everything home. But I guess time will have to tell.
I'm trying to look at his name right now. I wanted to shout out who's the guy that played like the cop?
Oh, Shea Whigham.
Yeah.
Shea Whigham is the best.
He had one of the low key, like, funniest roles in the movie, because he's just this cop trying to fucking stop Ethan. And at least ask him a couple questions about what the fuck is going on. And the entire time, Ethan's just one step ahead of him. And like his Shea Whigham's henchmen are like, what is it with this guy? And he's just like this grizzled cop who's like seen this guy go through all the motions.
Yeah.
He's seen all the Mission Impossible movies. He knows he's getting away with it. He knows that his trail of Ethan Hunt is essentially just Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill. And he's just like, he just does this kind of thing. Let's keep running.
Let's keep going. We got to get him. Shea Whigham is, I watched a weird movie with him in it last night called Small Engine Repair that kind of like blew my mind a little. He's great in it.
Yeah, he's great in he's one of those guys.
Great in everything. I mean, he's part of he was in the Fast series. I think he showed up in 5 and 6. He's always the frustrated cop, and frustrated cop writ large as a special agent is really fun. One thing that I really liked, though, is that he's sort of like Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive. You know the famous line in The Fugitive when Harrison Ford's like, I didn't kill my wife. And Tommy Lee Jones goes, I don't care, because it's just my job is to get you. The details are for you to work out with the suits in Washington. And Shea Whigham is sort of that guy where it's like, I don't know what is the
all
deal
this
here.
Is beyond me.
I've just got to get that guy. Yeah. But his little partner keeps being like, hey, boss, you know how they're doing all these bad things? You ever think maybe they do these bad things for good reasons? And he's like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. He's like, what if they're doing bad stuff, but to them it's good, and ultimately it's all the good thing. And by the end, Shea Whigham's starting to shine to the idea that maybe they're doing all these bad things because it's a good thing. And that was actually, I think, really well handled. And I love that as another antagonist to Ethan Hunt is like,
that was just a fun third heat to the whole thing. Yeah.
There was that killer shootout sequence too, where everyone had their car doors open, and that's where him and his partner like really shined, and you could kind of get the sense that they care about one another, and you know, listen to one another beyond just a business relationship, and like those little flourishes are kind of cool that you don't get in a lot of action movies, you know, you don't get that in the Fast movies, at least outside of their own in a vacuum melodrama, but like. It's some real moments kind of putting forth this utterly ridiculous premise.
I do like the Fast franchise has overtaken the Disney MCU as like the go-to comparison of like what you don't want to be doing at the movies right now.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time though, I just can't wait for Fast X2. It's gonna happen. In closing to our discussion of the movie, I would highly recommend this movie to anybody.
10 out of 10.
Incredible. Even all of the things that I said I didn't like about it, that stems more from me just having time to think about it than from it actually being an issue in the movie. The movie cooks. The pace is unbelievable.
It's the shortest
near 3 hours that you'll experience. And Tom Cruise jumping off the cliff on the motorcycle is like the thing I think of least, because there's so much other sweet goodness that's absolutely just super intense. I mean, the dangling off the train sequence at the end is infinitely more exciting than the motorcycle stunt, even though it's kind of helped into print by CGI. But man, they utilize it so well. The stakes are just great. It's awesome.
It comes out on Wednesday, right?
Yeah,
it
comes out on Wednesday, same day as this episode dropped.
July 12th, which is today.
Wink. Wink, wink. I loved it. I think it's so cool that we're alive at a time where the best action movies are being made. You know, there's a lot of bad out there, but like, you got your John Wicks, you got your Mission Impossibles, you got your Raid movies, you've got the good MCUs that, you know, overtake the bad. You've got it all. Atomic Blonde, Nobody. You've got
Nobody's great.
Nobody is the best. That's my favorite out of all of these ones that I've listed. Yeah. I mean, there was a new Indiana Jones movie. I saw it again yesterday.
Yeah, and you know how excited I am to see that movie? I recently spent too much money at an Applebee's, and they, in a promotion, they gave me 2 free tickets to see the movie, and I didn't even use them.
Well, you should, because it's actually quite good, and I think you'd enjoy it, because it's a very sweet movie.
I don't think I would like it.
Well, only one way to find out.
Old Harrison Ford, here's a hot take. Old Harrison Ford annoys me because he has this shtick where he's like, now I'm just a grumpy old man all the time, and don't even talk to me, Conan. Like that kind of like,
but it's a sweet grumpy. He knows that it's like a bit.
I don't know. It's like, fuck, it gets old after a while.
He has this one
part. And we're talking about one of my childhood heroes, by the way.
Fair enough. There's one part in Dial of Destiny where he's like climbing up a cliffside with the lady. And she's like, he stops and he's just hanging there. She's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm thinking. She's like, thinking about what? He's like, I'm thinking about how the disc in my back is deteriorating. I've got a plate in my leg. I've been shot 9 times. I've drank the blood of Kali Ma. I've been tortured with voodoo. He just starts listing stuff. He's like, so I'm thinking. And I was like, it's actually real fucking funny.
But really what the line should have been was, I'm thinking of all the money that Disney had to shell out to get me back to do a 6th movie.
It's like, I'm not thinking. My spine has taken over. I haven't had a conscious thought in ages.
I'm just thinking about how much I'd rather be watching Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
I hope I survive this shoot so that I can make it to Madurpo. I've taken to calling it Madurpo to save time. I'm 100 and my bones are glass.
Oh, God. All right, let's stop this bit and do some fucking other thing.
So, can't wait for the next one. Oh, I mean, any predictions for the next one?
Well, I think Tom Cruise is going to... Ethan Hunt is going to... pull a Dark Knight Rises and like die, and we're gonna see him at like a cafe later and give a nod to Grace or whatever her name is,
possibly. I mean, but didn't,
and like, and he'll be with Julia, he'll be with Julia at the cafe, so like he finally gets his fucking
that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah,
they just do it the exact same way. He like nods and she nods and they do that. Yeah. And then they erect a statue of Ethan Hunt in Gotham City.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he did it. He takes
next
the Batman
and Guy Fieri.
Yeah. Yeah. The end of Dead Reckoning Part 2, he takes the Batwing to fly a bomb far out over Gotham Harbor to save the day.
Dude, I just thought about, I don't know. Here's my prediction. Here's not a prediction, but here's what I want to happen. You know how like every fucking Mission Impossible now has a essentially what is a cold open?
Yeah.
Which is like all like a quick mission before the mission,
yeah,
so to speak. I want the cold open to be the opening to Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and just have like go through an entire like half episode where like shot for shot, everything's the same. People enjoying food, talk about the food. How's this food made? And then like as it starts to wrap up, you realize something is off at this moment, and that the chef is actually injecting uranium into the hot dogs, and then guy is like, you know what, Leo, I know all about the hot dogs because I'm actually, and then guy rips his mask off to reveal Ethan Hunt of the IMF, and then the fucking the match lights to the oven in the restaurant, and then that's when the intro starts.
I just love the idea of the movie opening with him just being like, Fieri, this is Triple D. We're driving up to an undisclosed location to check out some of the barbecue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're at the CIA headquarters cafeteria.
Kittredge is like cooking. And he's like, oh, bones at Kittredge. Kittredge has a shirt that just says like, audit the cook or something. And then he's like, so what do you put in this? And he's like, ah, that's actually an executive secret recipe.
Yeah.
And everything he asks, like, so you using yellow cake uranium in your yellow cake? Are there any other ingredients? And he's like, oh, unfortunately that is also a classified recipe. Oh no, it's Kittredge. So he'd be like, well, yeah. Guy, that is unfortunately a classified recipe. It's my best Kittredge. Yeah. I can't do it. Predictions, though, I do think they're going to reveal that somebody is behind the AI.
Yeah.
Like, Kittredge. Now, granted, I know that they say, like, the AI was supposed to be, like, a submarine thing and that it grew sentient and got out of everybody's hand. I still bet that there's a big bad behind it.
What if it's Benji?
That'd be kind of cool. It wouldn't be the first time that a tried and true good guy became a bad guy, a la Mr. Phelps in the first movie.
Or what if Benji accidentally wrote the AI program?
He's like, I was trying to write a popcorn recipe.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's only one popcorn recipe, Benji.
Well, it's like, think about like
Age of 3D chess.
Like the Age of Ultron thing, that could be a good line for Benji's plot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where he has to like destroy the child of his creation.
He has to go inside the computer.
Yeah.
All right, let's count down some stunts.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think that Ethan Hunt could actually feasibly really die as well, but I wouldn't want that. I don't think.
Me neither. I don't think that would be appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, I guess I'll start it off. My number five I picked because it's a classic stunt from a classic movie. Have you seen the Poseidon Adventure?
The one with Matt Dillon?
No, that was the remake, just called Poseidon. But the Poseidon Adventure from, I guess it's the 70s. It actually has Leslie Nielsen in a serious role. It's before he moved to comedy.
Isn't Gene Hackman also in it?
I believe Gene Hackman's in it. It's been a while since I've seen it. But it's a cruise ship that gets hit by a tidal wave and flips upside down. Now a group of survivors are climbing to the top, which is climbing upside down through. It's pretty cool. But there's a shot where there's a waiter hanging from one of the newly upside down tables, and he drops and falls away from the camera through a pane of glass and into just like a stunt thing. And it's a famous stunt because he was knocked unconscious by this. It's just a straight up like 3-story fall on his back. It's a decent movie. That stunt is jaw dropping.
Wow.
And it was done in the 70s. So it was just like, yeah, you look like a big dude. We're going to have you do this. And he just did it. You want to be a star? And then
who's OSHA?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, OSHA. We said ocean. It's a movie that takes place in the ocean. Now we want you to drop in the ocean through some glass. It's an incredible stunt, but I definitely recommend the movie. At least my memory of it. That was my number five.
I'm going to go with number five, the stair, the hallway, the ramp scene in The Protector.
Ooh, yeah.
Where he's like running up that big circular ramp up like a hotel.
Yeah.
Like balcony or whatever. And he's just fighting everybody along the way. And he like, he'll get to a certain part, then I have to like jump over the railing and like go down a few levels and like lure people out and like kick. It's pretty much like old boy fight scene, but like on a whole ramp. Then there's like doing it in one shot, one take. It's, and you can tell it's all one take too. It's not one of those fakies, as I call them.
Well, I think what's cool about that one too is you could see everybody getting tired. Like, as he gets towards the top, the choreography gets a little bit more brutish and a little bit more like just, and you can tell it's just an exhausting shoot. I almost included the tree scene from the very beginning of Ong Bak, because it's just like an exhausting kind of thing, but I ultimately decided against it. Yeah, the protector's great because you know what? I would fight all those dudes if it meant getting my elephants back.
Where are my elephants?
Where are my elephants? Give me back my elephants! He'd scream. And do you remember the one elephant's name? He screamed it all the time, and it was
Tom Mapplethorpe Cruise.
No, no. No, the elephant's name was Corn. But it was spelled K-O-R-N. So there'd be parts where he'd be screaming, Corn! And it would say the name of everybody's favorite band at the bottom.
Yeah.
Wappadoo!
That was Anything Adam Sandler.
To... Yeah, he was also in Corn. My number four is from Police Story 3, aka Super Cop. And it's, it might as well just be the entire back half of that movie, but there's a stunt where Michelle Yeoh falls off of the back of a car onto the hood of a car and rides it. And in the outtakes at the end of the movie, they show her doing this stunt multiple times and not landing it. And it's very clear that they did this stunt by having one car drive in front of another car, and then Michelle Yeoh just had to fall onto the car and hope for the best. But oh, I mean, she's an athlete and a stunt woman, so it's, you know. But in the closing credits, they show all the Jackie Chan outtakes. They show her, like, hitting the car, then hitting the street and rolling to a stop, and then, like, popping up and laughing about it. And, like, Jackie Chan does this, and, you know.
Oh, God.
And it happens over and over again, but the stunt looks great. And, you know, there's no OSHA happening in 90s Hong Kong cinema. So yeah, it's just an impressive stunt, and when you see behind the curtain as to how that stunt was done, it's just impressive. I mean, it's, and now she's the current reigning best actress winner.
Yeah,
it's just so wild, but insanely well deserved. What a lady!
My number four. Speaking of what a lady is, Zoe Bell on the car in Death Proof.
That was my number three.
Even though I don't really like this movie so much, I do love this scene, and it does have an appearance in my late night, you guys gotta check out this fucking YouTube clip roster.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah.
Well, when we were talking car movies, the movie Vanishing Point that I was talking about, that's the car.
I couldn't see it.
Yeah, there you go. Ha ha.
Because it vanished.
I got it. It just wasn't very funny. But that's the
Wait, Dan, give the audience time to laugh.
Fair enough. Yeah. Hold for laugh. Yeah. Hold for laughter.
Oh, right, we should be good.
All right, good. Take a sip of water, ginger ale or something, and they're good to go. But yeah, Vanishing Point. That's that card. Yeah, Death Proof was my number three as well. That's another one where, you know, of course there was safety stuff put into play for that, but a lot of that stunt was just Zoe Bell holding on for dear life.
Yeah.
And it, you know, of course you control for everything and, you know, you got to control for it, but like, there's no way to do that stunt without a little bit of just some fucking incredible badass has to hold on for dear life and just, you know, use their skills as a stunt performer to know where to be and how to balance and all that. It's so
Zoe Bell just rules.
She rules. And I love that movie. I think that movie's incredible. But
it wasn't for me.
Fair enough. I get why people don't like it, but I mean, I've seen a lot of those movies it was supposed to be, and it like really nails what it was doing. But I think that's such a good stunt, and I love that it's a stunt that is framed in a movie that is about stunts.
Yeah.
You know, Stuntman Mike is a stunt car driver. Like, the whole thing is these people are just like stunt obsessed people, and then it all showcases in And a lot of movies back in the day exist because they were like, we got a great idea for a stunt set piece, so let's shoot that and we'll build a movie around it. You know, that happens probably a lot now. I mean, heck, That might,
Tom Cruise does it.
That might be what happens with this, because part of the fun of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning is like, how do we get to his only option being to ride a motorcycle off a cliff and then parachute, you know, down to a train? How do you get to that? And they got to it naturally, but like a lot of movies very much don't do it naturally. And Death Proof is parodying that, where it's like, why is this happening? Well, because a stunt lady wants to do a stunt. Perfect. But goddamn, she does that stunt.
I always find it interesting too, because it's like in my trade of graphic design, there's a rule of like, never try to force anything. But in this trade, it's like the reason that we have these great pieces of cinema is because we found how to do one really cool thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to use that one really cool thing. And it's like with what I do, it's like, take that cool thing and put it in your toolbox, save it for later. But with the film industry, especially like thinking about going back to Star Wars, where you're like, we just found out VFX, check this shit out.
Yeah.
We got to put it on every movie.
Well, it's like I say, we just figured out how to do that thing where we cut someone with a sword and then they don't realize it. And then they fall to pieces. Put it in every movie, and sure enough, they did. So Death Proof was my number three, so you're up again.
Oh, shit. My number three was the Dark Knight Rises plane hijack scene.
Ooh, that's a killer stunt.
Which I think, I don't think it was fully practical. I think they shot a lot with the stars inside of the set.
Yeah.
But it was definitely done by people, and it was a very impressive stunt, and it was... It translated amazing on screen, especially in IMAX.
Yeah.
And because I was like,
that scene was shown before Ghost Protocol in IMAX. Yeah.
We all went into that one like, what are they going to do? Heath Ledger unfortunately passed. How are they going to wrap up the story? And we were given very little except for this particular piece of marketing, which I think quelled a lot of the fears of people at the time, only for them to prove us right in the end. Unfortunately, there was nothing that Nolan could have done. It was just a series of unfortunate circumstances, but he did the best he could, and that scene is proof that he did.
That's a weirder movie than people give it credit for, but I'm a fan. It's not great in terms of like what I think it could have been, but like that's a weird, bold movie. But I know that the beginning, when they drop the shot where they're hanging from the plane and the plane actually falls, that was done. They did that.
All
in camera. And it's just, you know, since it's a Bane mask, it can be anybody. You know, you don't have to put Tom Hardy there.
Well, Aidan Gillen was also there.
Yeah. But I mean, he's another, I think they probably CGI'd some faces or, you know, did that kind of a thing. So my number two is probably my all-time favorite action movie. It's both my favorite James Cameron movie and my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. But the giant bridge scene in True Lies, the bridge is out! The bridge is out! So many brilliant layers. You've got Jamie Lee Curtis and Tia Carrera duking it out inside a limousine with a dead driver that's going to the bridge being out. Yep. Arnie hanging off a helicopter trying to get her out of the car. The whole thing is just fantastic. She ultimately gets the upper hand by hitting Tia Carrera with her wedding ring, which ties into the themes of the movie. And right at the last moment, he does the get it, baby, and she grabs it, and then the car falls and she gets sucked out of it. And in a very similar shot to Dark Knight Rises, you see the car falling to its death with Jamie Lee Curtis in the foreground hanging off a helicopter, which she did do.
That's awesome.
That was done. There's a famous story where James Cameron was like, I really want to get this shot, but we do have to like harness you to hang you from the bottom of a helicopter. Like, you know, will you do that? She's like, well, what are you going to be doing? He's like, well, I'm in the harness above you with a camera. And she's like, okay, well, if you're doing it, then I'm doing it. And nice. Then her and James Cameron did that together. And
a good leader will never ask you to do something that they wouldn't do.
Yep. And it's just, that is such an incredible movie. And that's a great stunt that involves, I mean, that whole sequence involves stunt driving, explosions, miniatures, choreography, air choreography, missiles, just everything. And at the center of it all is this just unlikely but brilliant chemistry between Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jamie Lee Curtis, Harry and Helen Tasker.
I gotta rewatch
that movie. That might be in like my top five favorite all movies. True Lies.
I gotta watch
him and watch
that movie, man.
And Tom Arnold is so high on coke that whole time. He's like gnashing his teeth and shit. It's a weird performance. But yeah, the bridge is out. The bridge is out. So good.
My number two is the Matrix Reloaded highway chase.
Unbelievable.
Because like again, they use this in marketing material to get us hyped for the movie, and boy was I hyped to watch Carrie Ann Moss go backwards down or opposite flow of traffic on a motorcycle, which she really did.
And that was I think the Wachowskis built a 2 mile highway Australia somewhere in order to get all of that. And like that just speaks to that's another one though that speaks to pre-production right there.
Yeah.
Because they're both brilliant and putting together that whole thing involved a lot
and way ahead of their time. I think that Sense 8 is going to be go down as one of the best shows.
I still got to watch that.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I would like to watch that. I know that even Matrix Resurrections, I was not hot on it at first, and then upon rewatch, it's actually just fucking brilliant.
I would revisit it, yeah.
It's worth watching again without.
But this highway chase scene is like easily coming off the hands of my favorite action scene, which is the stairway weapons fight with Neo and the crew there. And then you have like the cool badass dreaded twins and Morpheus with the sword. All this stuff is great.
I always think of those twins whenever you see Charlie's character in Lethal Weapon 5, the henchman with the blonde hair. I always think of them.
And also Charlize Theron's character in the Fast franchise now.
Yes, Cypher. Yes. Probably a named Cypher. Never trust a Cypher. All right, my number one is from a 1990 Hong Kong action movie called Fatal Termination. I will send you a clip to this, Stephen, because you got to see it. I saw this at an Exhumed Films event. It stars Robin Chow. He plays Liu Kang in the Mortal Kombat old movie. He's Chris Farley's brother in Beverly Hills Ninja. This is one of his early action movies back when he was like a stunt double for Jackie Chan. And in this scene...
Wait, what?
Yeah, he was a stunt double. He was on Jackie Chan's stunt team.
Oh, okay.
For the guys he fights with is what I mean.
Thank God.
And in this scene, a little girl is kidnapped and dangled out of a car window by her hair and driven in a high-speed chase, which they did by creating a rig that looks like an arm and harnessing an actual terrified, probably six-year-old child out of a car window and then just shot a police chase. Because this is a 1990 Hong Kong action movie.
Oh, my God.
So there's no regulation. It is bananas to see. And even though it's not a person actually holding her by her hair, it's like a rig that looks like an arm, she looks so scared. Like, so scared. Because it's a real child that's really scared. And it's a mom who's like a badass karate lady trying to get this girl, like, hanging onto the car, trying to get this girl from, you know, and they're trying to shake her off all while there's this little girl dangling. And it's just like, it's one of those, like, such a slap in the face of safety regulations that it's, like, appalling and shocking to see.
Yeah.
But in a late night grindhouse crowd, it was one of the craziest things for a crowd to just have their jaws hit the floor collectively. I will send you the link and you will lose your mind.
All right.
But Fatal Termination, which is apparently awaiting a big release, and I'm going to buy it because I want to show it to everybody. You're number one. We're running
Burj Khalifa climb.
Dude, it would have been in there if I didn't eliminate
the Burj Khalifa climb is number one on my list for so many reasons. A, the story about the IMAX camera and how every like 12 minutes they had to go down for a half an hour to change the tape. So Tom is just hanging off the Burj Khalifa for 8 hours a day. And having the visual of someone swinging around that building is insane. And this is also, this is also the entry point of how I get people into the Mission Impossible franchise, is watching that scene.
I think that is the scene from the series. If I didn't make it a rule not to have them on my list since we were talking Mission Impossible, that would have probably been at least...
I abided by no such rule, Daniel.
And you know what? As you shouldn't. But yeah, that's just incredible. It's such an incredible thing. And then that famous picture of Tom Cruise just sitting atop the Burj Khalifa waving with no wires. All right, we're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. At MovieMovieCast on all the things. Check out ScullyVision.com, at Dan Scully on Letterboxd. Steven, anything? BB8 _ the Corgi?
On Instagram.
Boom, there you go. We'll check in with you guys shortly. Sorry for the delay on the Hot Property episode. It's coming. Tech issues. We're weird. All right.
I love you.
I love you. It's been Movie.
I love you.
Hey, guys, it's me, Dan. In the middle of this episode, there was a part where I had something to say to Steven, and I completely forgot what it was, and I lost my train of thought, and you probably heard how frustrated I was that I could not seem to recover the point. But I remembered it now, and because I am the boss of my own destiny, I have decided to add it as a little aside here at the end of the episode, and it's this. In Mission Impossible 1, Ethan Hunt does a sort of sleight of hand thing with a floppy disk. Remember those floppy disks? And it establishes that he's pretty decent with sleight of hand. And it looks, at least to my estimation, to be as if Tom Cruise himself learned the prestidigitation required in order to do all of the sleight of hand tricks. And, you know, it's a fun little thing. In Dead Reckoning Part 1, there is a MacGuffin in the form of a key, and multiple characters do sleight of hand tricks to pickpocket and repocket this item through a variety of different characters. But this time around, it seems as if the sleight of hand that they're using is digitally created after the fact, which I gotta say, I'm a little bit bothered by. Because it's actually probably easier to do sleight of hand with a tiny little key, but, you know, who wants to train the whole cast to be Penn and Teller? Not I, said this guy, but, excuse me. That said, it's fun that they invoke the sleight of hand, because that's part of what makes this movie so much fun, is that the stunts are almost second place to all of the espionage, the sneaky conversations, the disguises, all that fun stuff. And sleight of hand is definitely part of that, part of pickpocketing, part of, you know, all that sort of itty-bitty bads that help the big good. And so yeah, I was a little bit bothered by that, because I feel like you should just have the characters actually do it, because it comes across as almost comical. The way that in like Now You See Me, the magic that they do is explained as having been done with sleight of hand and magic, but we see on the screen that it's just done using CGI and After Effects and things like that. And it just seems kind of silly for Jesse Eisenberg to explain how he did a trick and have that explanation be an actual real explanation as to how a trick can be done, even though we just saw it done with very obvious CGI. It sort of had that vibe, and it bothered me, but like I said, I like the characters being sneaky little thieves. So, you know, you give and take. And Tom Cruise, we worship you for doing whatever it is that you do to entertain us, up to and including riding a motorcycle off a cliff. So just wanted to get that point out there while it was on my mind. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go see this movie if you haven't already. If you and if you haven't, sorry we spoiled it, but we warned you. So fuck off. I love you.